Welcome to another episode of Sharing the Hope from the Micah Mason Foundation. I'm Patrick Mason, your host, and today we are joined by Bethany Reformat.
That's correct.
Awesome. Got it on one.
Well done.
And Aaron. Oh, goodness, Aaron. I keep... Fork Whiskey?
Borkowski. You got it. Good job. Two tough names.
Yeah. Well, Aaron, it's good to have you back on. And Bethany, it's good to meet you.
Great to be here.
Thanks for coming in. Bethany is new to the show. So how did you end up coming into the world of congenital heart defects? What's your story?
My story starts with my career, to be honest. I was aware that people are born with a variety of different complications in their health, but I had never really delved into the specifics of what those might be, what they would be called, how that would affect the person as well as their family. It was always a very vague sort of other people kind of experience that I was just aware of.
Yeah.
With my career, I sort of accidentally found myself in nonprofit land, as I like to call it, and discovered that I really do enjoy being that person in the background who's crunching data and taking care of databases and all that kind of nerdy type stuff. And I just kind of moved from one nonprofit to another, as we do. And HeartWorks provided the unique opportunity to be there for a startup nonprofit, which I was really excited about because, like every industry, the more established something becomes, the more rigid it can be, and the more sort of stuck in its ways it can get. And you can find yourself doing things not being entirely sure how it really affects the mission because it's just one report after another. And you're thinking, how is this making our mission get any closer to being realized? And I was super thrilled to find myself in a startup environment where I felt like there is an opportunity to be directly tied to, you know, the mission's outcome. So it wasn't really about CHD for me at the beginning. It was a lot more selfish. And then I started to learn about CHD and about the parents and the children and the adults living with it and the medical system surrounding it and the science involved. And I was hooked. I was like, I can't believe that this isn't a bigger conversation amongst people like myself who are not directly affected. Because your average everyday person is aware of, motivated to do something about a huge variety of things that they're not directly affected by. So why is it that CHD isn't something that's really caught people's attention? Because, I mean, one in 100, that means you have absolutely every single person has at some point interacted with somebody who has CHD. They're probably close to somebody who has CHD. It's just amazing to me that it's not more talked about. So I'm excited to be part of that.
Good deal. You work for HeartWorks.
I do, yes.
Yeah. This is awesome. I love HeartWorks. What is your role with them?
I am the person who sits quietly, preferably alone, in the room with the computer. I love talking to people, but in terms of what I do, I like the quiet of being on my computer. I manage the donor database. So everybody who interacts with us in any capacity, really, whether it's by giving a gift or attending a tour or an event or visiting our shop or anything, really, we keep them all in a place and we keep tabs on them and we send them emails and we invite them to things and we interact with them and try to make them feel good about being part of our mission. So I kind of manage all that background stuff, make sure that my team has what they need to go out there and advocate for CHD families and get the HeartWorks name out there and what we're doing.
Okay, good deal. So you did something similar at previous charitable groups or was it?
Yeah, I've worked for three different nonprofits before I got to HeartWorks and they were all in one way or another healthcare related. One of them was research related. One was community health related. So I had my foot in the door on some of the health-related medical stuff before I got here, but yeah.
Okay. Are you in the same area as the lab or are you somewhere else in the U.S. or?
No, I am in the state of Rhode Island.
Oh, that's long. Okay.
Yeah, I'm out there. I'm out in the woods over here.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So, smallest state in the union, right?
It is. Yes. They don't feel that way here, I've learned. I'm originally from New York State, and the culture shock has been, for me, delightful. I'm not sure about the people I interact with.
Good. Good deal. So, okay. So have you gotten a chance to go out to the labs at HeartWorks or seen the facilities?
Yes, I have. I was able to go there. We had a nice big staff meeting where I got to interact with everybody. This was before Eau Claire, the HeartWorks grand opening. So this was in Rochester, Minnesota for me. But
okay.
Yeah, I got a chance to see it all. It was wonderful. It was so nice to see what's actually happening and see the labs. I felt very proud to be part of HeartWorks when I got there.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask, what did you see? What did you like? What's the lab like?
Yeah, I think what's really exciting about it is that it's tempting to assume that because we're a small nonprofit, that what we do is small. And it was really nice to go there and see, we may be a small nonprofit, but what we're doing is not small. It's massive. Not only does it require a lot of space, but it requires a lot of highly skilled professionals and crazy technology. It's really nice to see, like, yeah, our name is still small. We're still getting our name out there, but what we're doing is massive. It was really cool.
Awesome. So how long have you been with HeartWorks?
I think I'm coming up to 4 years, I want to say. I'm pretty sure I'm coming up to 4 years. Yeah.
Okay. So pretty close to the beginning, if I've got my timeline right.
Yeah, I think from the nonprofit arm perspective, I know that Tim and Matt and the HeartWorks team in general has been doing this for, I think it's 14 years, right, Aaron? Yeah, I think they've been working on this for about 14 years, but the very specific nonprofit arm was established later on, much closer to when I joined.
No, I remember the old Tom and Karen Wanek Foundation piece of it. And I think that's when I met Tim, when he was still sort of the champion in that arena.
Oh, so you remember way back. So when did you and Tim meet?
I think I met him in 2017. So the NPC QIC learning session in Cincinnati, if I remember correctly. He gave a presentation there and it kind of blew me away. I was like, oh, good. Somebody's doing research for the down the line stuff, because at that time, NPC QIC was extraordinarily focused on just the first year of life effectively, and was kind of just branching into the what's down the line for Fontan people. And we were not, Michael didn't have a Fontan yet, but we knew it was coming. And so we started asking the question, well, what does down the line look like? And since then they've sort of morphed into something bigger, but it was good to meet Tim and to understand that, yeah, there's some real forward-facing work going on out there. So,
yeah. So how old was Micah when you and Tim met?
He would have been, goodness, he would have been almost two. Yeah, almost two.
Okay. So you had those first couple of years living in a world where you couldn't be sure that somebody was trying to solve this problem. That must have felt incredibly scary.
Yeah, it was. I don't know if scary is the right word. Like, it probably was, but there's a point at which, at least for myself, you kind of just don't let yourself feel certain feelings, because you know if you do, they could overwhelm you. You just look for, what can I do? You know, it's the old adage of the worries of the day are not worth killing yourself over. The day will take care of itself. Do what you can, what you've got in front of you. And so that's sort of what you do, at least what we did, me and my wife did. It's sort of interesting because you go into this space we went into this space after the Glen, and then definitely after Fontan, where you could kind of just pretend nothing had happened. Like, you could kind of just, like, there was no, you know, Micah was taking like aspirin every day, but like, big deal. It's no big impact to the family. Once we got them weaned off the feeding tube and we were past the Fontan especially, and then something inevitably happens. For us, it was Micah's oxygen saturation never got to where it should have been. He was always in the mid 80s. We just had to go in and close the fenestration, and his O2 sats jumped right up in 95 plus. But then, you know, a year and a half later, his pressure started to creep up. So now he's on an Allopro. And so now we're playing the having to stay connected to the reality of the situation all the time. But you get into these honeymoon phases where you can not have to pay attention to it for a little while, which I think is a good thing, to be honest. I think you go kind of crazy.
Yeah, well, both for you guys and for Micah, just to be able to enjoy living life just as a person without having to think every 5 seconds about what's going on inside your chest.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's, you know, for us, tube winning was huge on that. Once we got him eating by himself, and it was definitely you could have those moments where it wasn't the most important thing. Just living was the most important thing. So
yeah,
I wouldn't say it was scary as much as it was for me, it was a galvanizing thing. Like it was okay, either somebody is doing this and I haven't found them yet, or I'm going to make somebody do it. Mm-hmm. It's one of those situations. That's the whole reason we formed the charity, was to find people who either were doing it or find people who could do it and support them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was very ecstatic to find the Todd and Karen Wanak Foundation at the time and Tim, and then seeing that transform into HeartWorks. It's just beyond wonderful to understand. Yeah, there's lots of people out there who are fighting for this, who are fighting for the future, for the cure, effectively.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you find it with Micah when you guys are trying to explain to him at these various stages of life, at his various stages of life, you know, explaining to him what his body is going through, what he's experiencing, and helping him understand? Because it's a lot of quite technical, complicated medical jargon to distill for somebody who's still trying to figure out which way to write their B, you know? Like, right. How do you help them understand? Because I have to imagine, too, you don't want to make them feel too different or make them feel like something's wrong with them as a person, but also help them understand the seriousness of it. Like, that must be a difficult thing to communicate.
Yeah, it is and it isn't. It's sort of like you've got in our case, at least, we approached it like, what does he need to know? What does he need to understand? What does he need to be able to communicate to others, right? Because there's, kind of that two-part there. There's plenty of stuff. Plenty of things that I can be taught that I could not regurgitate. Like, I couldn't explain to you, you know, I've watched the videos and stuff for HeartWorks, but I couldn't tell you how the whole cell thing works and taking the stem cell out. And I could not give that presentation, even though I've been told it. So there's a certain level of knowledge we have to get him to understand. And then there's another level you've got to be able to get him to be able to verbalize, right? He's got to be able to tell his teachers his coaches or friends or whatever. You go a little deeper with them individually, but it starts, you know, at a fairly normal place. You have a special heart, you have a different circulation, you have, you know, and you use the terms that make sense at the age. Things work a little differently. Sometimes you're going to get tired. You give them the warnings, and it comes easy when they have a sibling, because then you're teaching the sibling along with them, and you know, you really can't punch him. in the stomach there, because he's got a pacemaker and it's not gonna go well.
Right. Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, stop jumping, you know, from that. If you're gonna land with your feet, not with your chest.
Wow.
So there's that whole aspect of it that sort of is just extremely practical that you have to get across. And then as they get older, it goes along with the medical interventions, right? So as they get older, you explain to them in more detail what's going on, if they want to know, if they ask questions. And I don't know how it is with everybody's kids, but there's a difference between my daughter and my son. If I tell my daughter, hey, let's go do this, her response is, okay, we'll give it a shot. If I tell Micah, let's go do this, his response is no. Doesn't matter what it is.
And that sounds familiar.
It's let's go, you know, play laser tag or something. No. And then we go play and he has a great time. So it's getting over the no for us and getting him to a place where he's like, okay. And then, you know, talking about the stuff about the medical stuff, because I think a lot of these kids end up with medically induced trauma, which is where seeing an ambulance or a hospital or a doctor can cause sets of feelings that they don't fully understand.
Right.
And then just trying to be there with them through that.
Yeah.
Not necessarily treating it as something you have to cure, but understanding there are interventions to work with them through those.
Yeah, that's a whole different level of support that other parents don't have to think about like that. It's a lot.
Yeah. Fortunately, I think the children's hospitals have gotten pretty good these days about realizing the return patients are going to have those kind of issues and being as charitable to their patients as they can be. I don't know, Aaron, has that been your experience?
Yeah, I think the services that the children's hospitals are providing, and I think mental health has become such a huge topic in treating the whole patient and having conversations weekly about it with different groups and parents. And I have a 12-year-old girl who's on the brink of some interesting, life in general. Right. So expecting some challenges, but nothing we can't face. And like you, it's a supportive environment and we'll always have the conversation. I don't know if this is your experience, but having the nonprofit and having had started it so early, we don't know any different. Bella and her brother, Justin, don't know any different. We all always had Beats for Bella and we always talk about what we're doing and we share so much. And we talk to other families that it has normalized it. This is just our life and this is what we do.
Yeah.
So I'm interested if it's, I guess, maybe does it do the same thing for you guys? Because you've had the Micah Mason Foundation for such a long time.
Yeah. And I think that's part of it because, anytime we do a fundraiser or something, we talk about the condition, we talk about what's going on. And, the kids are always listening, right? Even if it doesn't seem like they are.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
Yeah. And it's funny because we'll get to I think Micah came up to me the other day and he was like, are we going to do another video game fundraiser again? I want to do that again. Can we do that in December? And I'm like, sure, we can look at putting that together. So he's very tied into it. And yeah, I think that's a big part of it because I've decided to talk about it so much. And then I do talk about it so much that he gets to hear it a lot more.
Yeah, for sure.
No, it makes sense that if you've got a situation that's not going anywhere, it's going to be part of your everyday life to kind of make it as normal an experience for them as possible. It has to sort of keep all of the other levels, like you were talking about mental health and the anxieties and things that they would experience. The more normal it seems, I'm sure the more baseline they can get to with their emotions.
Yeah.
In theory.
Well, in theory.
In theory.
So, there's been a huge amount of work in the neurological side of what's going on. We've seen the expansion of CNOC. People who are really endeavoring to figure out there seems to be a lot more neurodivergent or mental health related issues that impact learning and education for a lot of these kids and how that plays out down the line and what that looks like. We've seen that, and we're struggling with that with Micah. You talked about like the B's and D's backwards and what's, how much of his problems are caused because he's him and how much of the problems are caused because of the CHD and the effect of being, in a medical coma for the first 2 months after birth.
Right, right.
All of that.
For you guys, do you find that you kind of isolate and kind of take each thing as it comes, or do you try to sort of treat the whole thing as a whole and sort of keep everything in mind all at once? Or is that a silly question?
Yeah. So I would love to say that we had a strategy of it, but it's very much do what you think is the right thing in the moment for the problem you're kind of approaching. There does have to be kind of a holistic approach to everything in general, just from a timing perspective. Like there's only so much time of the day, right? And we know XYZ things are important, right? So you have school that takes up a big chunk of time. And then you have, he's in sports for us. He's just gotten onto the swim team. So he started to swim regularly now, but he was doing flag football before.
Okay.
And we have him doing drums it's funny because he like absolutely refuses to do drum practice, but like he'll wander by his drum set and start like playing randomly. And it's like, we know you like to do this. Stop. Mm-hmm.
Stop hiding. Oh boy. Yeah.
And then like, okay, well, how much time then do we get to dedicate to working on handwriting or working on reading or working on your math mm-hmm. skills? And then, well, we got to, how much sleep do you need to get? And you yeah. know. So it is very much a juggling act. So there's yeah. a lot of like investigation that goes on into like what would be the best thing we could do, what do we have the resources to do, and then how does that fit in with everything else we need? You know, how that affects you.
Yeah. That sounds like question. It would be helpful to have like a family assistants who are able to kind of like say, okay, here's the human being that you're in charge of, and here are all of their needs. And here's how you organize it. Here's a pie chart for their time. Like, it'd be helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think any parent would want one of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't just speaking on your behalf there. I was speaking like with the wistfulness of some time that I will never get back.
So you've got kids, right? You've got how many?
I do. I have 4 children. The youngest is 18 now, so we just saw our last high school graduation. Yeah, and it's very interesting having young adult. I still say children, even though I think I probably always will, which I'm sure they hate. But yeah, young adult children, really it sums it up in the phrase young adult children. That's what they are. They're doing a great job. They are. I did not. Something happens, and I'm sure you'll see this with your own, where you don't really realize the things that you yourself had to figure out because you were there. You were 18, 19, 20. You were there. You were in it. You were doing it. You didn't have any context for it. You were just, like you're saying, taking each moment as it comes and making decisions in those moments. It is quite an experience to be on this side of it, watching somebody daily go through this. And to think, wow, I know I made choices just like that, but I can't understand how they're making those choices. It's very fascinating to remind yourself, like, they're in that stage where they don't know that yet. They're figuring that out. So it's interesting.
Yeah.
I did have one of my sons as a swimmer, so I can relate to you on that one. That's a swimmates are, they take time.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's we had a swim meet. Daughter had a swim meet this week. This past weekend, it was 2 days. It was, yeah.
Yeah. It takes a while there.
Yeah. And a good book.
Yeah.
Some work.
Yeah. Yeah. I always wished that I was the kind of parent who could like be there for the other parents with their kids too, but I was really just there for mine. So it was like, oh boy, I've got 30 seconds to watch, and then the next 3 hours is just waiting.
Yep. Yep. Waiting for that next race.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Does he love it yet? Is he still not sure? Is he like, how does he feel about it?
I think he really enjoys the swimming part. Once we get to the racing and doing meets, we'll have that next hurdle of, no, I'm not going to do it. And then I'm sure when he does it, he'll love it. Yeah. So, but that's just our experience.
Yeah. My son ended up becoming really close with his team members. That I remember that being something that made his life so full. He really loved his teammates. They were like family to him, and he was the happiest I had seen him to date at that point when he was swimming with his friends. So, fingers crossed.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a big part of it. And I think, you know, the teamwork piece, I think a lot of people look at sports as sort of just physical thing, and, you know, it doesn't provide any value beyond just physical activity. But there's a whole other side of it. Discipline side, the working with the team, the making friendships, the working through adversity with other people, like there's a whole,
having a common goal, but different strengths and weaknesses to achieve it. It's all good stuff.
Let's get into HeartWorks a little bit. Like, you guys, I assume it's been about a year since we've talked. You guys have been busy. What's the new stuff you got going on?
We have been super busy.
Good.
So yeah, that's what you want to hear, right?
That's right.
A few things. Our most exciting, I can't say most exciting, but pretty cool, is that we just opened a few weeks ago our world headquarters. So HeartWorks World Headquarters has officially opened in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, expanding the facilities and the ability to do the work that we plan to do. It's really super exciting. I can't wait to get there and see it one day, but I am in Philadelphia and travel is virtually impossible these days. But we're super excited about that and all the possibilities that come with that, with all the skin biopsy and the bioengineered cardiac tissue study that have been moving all in the right direction this year also. So we consented, enrolled 100 patients in our skin punch biopsy. And I believe we're on the brink of actually biopsying our 100th patient. That's a tough one to say like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think next week or the week after, we have our 100th patient coming in to get their skin punch. And we'll move as fast as we can. Funding is always sometimes a challenge, but we're working on it. We have the plan in place to be able to select those patients that have gotten their skin punch done and who are a part of the co-op that we can bring back and we'll grow their heart cells first, because that's the first step, and bring back for their procedure to get their own cells put back in their body. Like I said, timeline is still unclear, but when you think in terms of 40 years ago, nothing has changed in 40 years, monumental changes. I can't say nothing has changed, but it's been 40 years since the Fontan and we're too stagnant and we need more advancements. And you think about in a year or two, we're going to have that. You know, Mike is going to be 10 or he's 10 and going to be 11 and Bella's 12, going to be 13. It's like a year or two. That's like, whoa. You know, when they're 18, they can go get their skin punched on. And maybe even if we prove, and they will, that this is a real treatment, maybe sooner. Maybe the teenagers can go get it before they're 18. So it's a really exciting time at HeartWorks. Yeah, we're moving as fast as we can. And I mentioned the co-op and we're plugging along with membership. It's really, really important and a top priority to get members in the co-op. It really gives patients and caregivers the ability to have their voice heard and share their data so that HeartWorks can design the clinical trials based on the patient population. And not, they're incredibly smart people, but sometimes, you know, you come up with this great idea and then it doesn't fit, right? Or you can't find people to enroll. So the goal is to design the clinical trials based on the patient population in the co-op. You know, we're fully accessible online on social media to engage with families and patients who have any questions. Yeah, I mean, those are like the big ones and they're pretty big as far as the science end of everything goes and our advancements with the product development.
Okay, so tell me a little bit more about the co-op. So you mentioned the co-op. So what is the co-op and how do I get to it and all that?
Yeah, so the co-op is a patient-driven database. We are building it with the CHD community. So you would go to HeartWorks website. There is a button at the top for the co-op at HeartWorks and you can enroll as a member. You fill out your basic information. You do have to sign some consent forms, but everything is de-identified. We don't share anybody's identity. You will link your medical records to your current hospital. Right now, Bella's only at CHOP, but as adults grow and they move and if they're records are at multiple centers, all centers can be linked. And then we'll periodically send out some surveys. You can input symptoms. I track Bella's migraines because from time to time she'll get some migraines. So it's really very user friendly. And the data we collect is really just meant to inform our trials, inform our clinicians and everybody doing all the research. So you can go, there is an email for a co-op at HeartWorks, but everything is right online there on that page. And there's a few like question and answers, if you know, basic questions, but really user-friendly and easy. And the goal is to be able to partner with other companies doing trials and have this be our one-stop shop for CHD. And when you, if Micah ever needed an intervention and he was showing symptoms based on his hospital visits, you would get flagged you would get an email from the co-op and say he's eligible for this trial. And we got that a few weeks ago with Bella. She qualified for a Fuel 2 study because she's 12 and because she's a certain weight. So we went down to CHOP and we did all the background tests and everything. We're really lucky. We did not end up qualifying because she's doing too well. But the system is working, right? Yeah. The process is working to inform patients. And patients got informed when they qualified for the skin punch. Adults were getting informed that they, you know, could come and get their skin punch taken to be a part of that study.
Okay. One of the things that's really exciting about the co-op too, if you remember back in our conversation when you were talking about the sort of correlated difficulties that you are seeing in MICA that perhaps maybe other heart parents see, maybe they don't. The co-op is kind of the answer to a lot of those questions, because the more people essentially donate their data, the more they input, like for example, Aaron putting migraines in, the more our team is able to start to find correlations that are specific to CHD and things that currently right now we might not even know that people with CHD are experiencing because of their condition. It puts us in a position of knowing that kind of stuff where right now you can only speculate sort of based on the people you meet and the different stories you hear. So it's not just good for the problems of now, but it's good for us to be looking towards the future to see that holistic care we were talking about. As a data person, I find that very exciting about the co-op, that it's, you know, you can do an awful lot when you have data-driven insights.
Yeah, there's an old saying is that I have enough data is something you'll never hear an engineer say.
Yep.
So, okay, so that's good. So, and it's all parent or patient driven.
Okay,
very good. And so if I was to interact with a co-op, and I have obviously, but I'm let's say I haven't. Sure. What am I inputting there? Is it just data that I've got? Am I sending you guys files, or what? Best case scenario, what would you guys want to see?
Yeah, you're just going to fill out some basic demographic information and sign consent. And then you don't really have to enter any other data once you link your medical records. It just dumps in and they stay connected. I do believe there's a time when you have to kind of just check if it's still connected. Depends on the hospital. Every hospital has seemed to be different with the amount of time that they'll stay connected. But every time Bella goes, just the new information comes in. And then there are some surveys that we ask, and some are mental health driven, some are family driven, some are patient driven. That's really the requirement of being a part of the co-op.
Okay, good. Because that sounds easy, right?
Yeah, like I've attempted to put Bella in some registries and I, you know, this is not that. I actually talked to Tim one time because I had the paper in front of me. I'm like, I don't even know the answer to this question. I don't know how to answer this. And it's not that. So all that like high level medical knowledge just comes right from the cardiologist and the care team from their hospital.
Okay. It's good. It's good. So World Center. Awesome. What was the location you said?
It's in Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
So Eau Claire. So like O and then apostrophe Claire.
E-A-U.
Oh, oh, as in the French. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. E-A-U. C-L-A-I-R-E. Okay. We're really excited about it. And that's actually where we're hosting our virtual dinner this year. So everybody will get to see inside the facility virtually this year, which will be pretty cool.
Okay. All right. So virtual dinner. Tell us more.
Yeah. February 19th. Registration opened last night. So everybody can go to our events page at heartworksinc.org and go to our events page and it should be right there. You click in and you can register for dinner. Micah obviously has a team, but if people want to create their own team, we encourage families to create their own team if they're not already a part of the HeartWorks family. We're also really encouraging people who are not affected. You know, that's one of the big things for me. And I know the whole team is getting in touch with those people who are not affected and bringing them into this kind of event, because it's really just a wonderful night. you like great food and have a little wine and your friends and your kids. We send out these awesome kids packs for everybody with chef hats and aprons. And it's just a great night. So there's no reason why your neighbors can't start a team or jump on your team and be a part of the night. And it's our fifth annual. So it's pretty exciting to be having run this for 5 years. It's going to be a big celebration this year. It is always, but this year is pretty special with everything that has happened with some of the changes and the growth that we've had over the past year. So yeah, it's open. Go register, get your dinner, make your plans. Thursday, February 19th, 6 p.m. Central Time. Yeah, and you can always connect with Kella and I if anybody has any questions.
Awesome. It's a great time. I've been most years I've been able to attend, and it's always a lot of fun to watch and to cook along. And the kids were a lot more involved this year than they had been in the past, watching the cooking and the being involved with it. So it's good.
Yeah, it's fun. My kids and my kids' friends, we rented a place local here, and the kids did most of the cooking and they like really loved it. So it's very interactive and easy. This is a family event. We're not like creating some like super fancy meal that's really hard to cook. It's meant to just be fun, easy night. And the kids do love it. They love it.
So we talk a little bit about, so after you get your skin punch and your heart cells are grown in the lab, then they're potentially injected back into you. That's an ongoing clinical trial, right? How is that going?
It's ongoing, but on a short pause right now. Our initial trial was set for 100 patients for the skin punch. And because we reached that, we're working on, should be early next year to reopen that trial for enrollment. So right now it's at a pause. People can still connect with HeartWorks and get on the list to make sure that they're ready. We're ready for them with our team. And we have not, there's been bioengineered is open, but obviously no patients have gone through it yet because we're working on identifying those first, I believe it's 9 patients to start that will be the first to get their cells back.
Okay. That's 9 coming out of the 100 person cohort that's done the skin punch.
Yes.
Correct. Okay. Can I ask, what's the criteria for those 9?
Oh, there's a really long list, and it is on our clinical trials page on the HeartWorks website. There's some pretty heavy exclusion criteria. That's why the protocol with doing everything through adults first and then proving the success, then being able to reduce the age and move down into pediatrics. I mean, they're tough words to say, and we don't really want to hear them, but heart failure, number one, there's some liver numbers that need to be met to qualify. You got to be pretty sick, but all that can be found on the website.
Okay. And you're looking at kind of restarting that or starting that up sometime next year, 2026?
Yeah, early 2026. I think enrollment will be back open for the skin punch.
Okay. So if you've got 100 patients, what's the next target?
Oh boy, that's not an Erin question. I don't know if you would know that from Tim, Bethany, but I do not know that number.
I don't know that number, but I believe that Tim's response would be something in the vein of as many as we can raise the funds to put through the trial. So everybody get to work on fundraising.
Yeah.
Because if we have the money, we'll put them through. I can hear his voice saying that.
I would agree.
Yeah. All of them.
Yeah, everybody.
Yeah. If we had our way. Yep.
Yeah. And that's why it's so important for families to be involved, right? And to share it. And you don't have to be a family that raises crazy amount of money. The awareness and the sharing of HeartWorks and our work and our mission and your story accompanied with that, I mean, that can move mountains. And you never know who you're talking to that might inspire somebody that can give, right? So it's just so important to just keep sharing the stories and talking as advocates, as families, as teams, to just keep doing it. It's working. We are at the tipping point. Things are changing. And from my perspective, seeing them, we really are. It's HeartWorks, but it's also the CHD community. I think there's a level of frustration that has mounted and we're boiling over a little bit. And I think we're almost at that point where like things are just going to open up. I feel it. I can feel it in my bones that we have, I don't want to say a time, but you know, it's coming. It's coming soon. And we have the power to help.
Yeah. And to encourage you guys as parents, as well as anybody who's listening, you know, some of our biggest donors in terms of amount of dollars are people who are not in any way personally affected by CHD. And that wasn't the case a few years ago. In the last few years, some generous people who are willing to give quite substantial sums have been getting involved and have been advocating more. So to Aaron's point, yeah, there is a tipping point taking place where I do think allyship, I suppose, is maybe what we would call it. People who are not part of the community, but are allies to the community. It's growing.
And honestly, I'll brag on Bethany a little bit because she won't do it for herself, but it's been instrumental to have somebody like her part of the team because she loves what she does and she really values this community and is a very genuine person with her motivation. But having somebody like this on the team that allows us to go out and talk and she can find some of the people for us and help do the research, it's a foundation for the team to be able to go and do. And everybody does what they do best. I could never do what she does. I could never do what Tim does. But I can be a loud voice and figuratively and literally in a room that just makes you pay attention. Just like you, right? Like this, what you're doing and being able to bring this to the community.
Yeah. And I think I agree with you. I think we are hitting something of a tipping point. From what I've seen, it's been since my first learning session I went to back in 2016 or 2017, watching it kind of slowly ramp up. You know, it went from I knew about one or two organizations who were really trying to tackle the problem to now I know it's y'all, and then Source has gotten up and running, and Mezion is now up and running, and NPC and Fawn got together and did SP1, and there's so many more people who are getting involved in the problem. And at the same time, so many people, I think, realizing that all of the adult heart interventions that we have today were because of work done in pediatric heart surgery back in the, you know, 20s and 20s to 50s. And really, like, it all starts in pediatrics. Like, it all started with them trying to save kids with congenital heart defects. And that's why we have ECMO and heart and lung machines and all of that. I think people are going, you know what, whether or not there's quote unquote money to be made in this realm, if we solve this problem, we can solve much bigger ones. So I do fully agree with you. I think we're at a real tipping point. It's nice to watch.
Yeah. And be a part of. We're a part of it too. It's great to see, but it's like, you know, you get one more person on the team and advocating and using their voice. That's just, we're soldiers. It's just what we do. And we just got to keep doing it and we're going to get there.
Yeah. Well, as a fellow loudmouth, thank you.
I have to be told to be quiet sometimes. I don't listen very well.
Yeah, we're not really supposed to. Well, Bethany, it's been great having you on. Thank you for the work.
It's a pleasure being here. Oh, yeah. No, it's my pleasure to be here, and it's my pleasure to do the work.
And then last minute pitch. So if I'm a parent listening to this, what should I, you know, with a kid with a CHD, or I'm, you know, living with one myself, what should I go do?
All right. You should register for the dinner. You should check out the co-op. And please ask any questions. These are the ways to use your voice. And if you haven't already started a team, start a team. The pages that we have that Bethany has been so instrumental in building, they let you just tell your story. And they're forever pages. They don't ever go away. And she does a lot of work to maintain them. And they're just a great way to share the easy click. And people can donate. People can join your team through them. So I definitely encourage any family who's not, doesn't have a team yet to start a team, get signed up for the dinner and check out the co-op. It's really going to be important for the future of CHD care and treatment and informing clinical trials.
Awesome.
Something like that.
Yeah. Well, thank you both very much for joining me. It was very good having you on.
Thank you so much, Patrick.
Thank you, dear listener, for joining us for this episode of Sharing the Hope from the Mike and Mason Foundation. If you'd like to find out more about HeartWorks or to join the co-op, head over to their website, heartworksinc.org. To support the podcast, head over to the website, micahmasonfoundation.org, and click on the donate button.